Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9 coming to you from our beautiful Channel 9 studios here on the Redmond campuses. We're talking to Visual Studio Integration Partners, and today we have a special guest. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is Iqbal Khan. I'm a technology evangelist at AlachiSoft. Mm-hmm. We are a software company based in the San Francisco Bay Area, and we have a product called Ncache, mm-hmm. which actually we've had for a very long time, for almost 10 years now.
So caching is like one of those difficult computer science problems that everyone has a really hard time with. So why don't you tell us what caching is and why it's such a challenge?
Okay. Well, I think the reason caching exists is because the relational databases and the traditional storage, they do not scale. And applications need to scale because of the web and all of the other things that are happening.
Sure.
So you can add application servers to increase the transaction capacity at the application tier, but you cannot add database servers in the same fashion. Mm-hmm. And that's what really creates a bottleneck. And that bottleneck is what caching, and I'm talking about distributed caching, solves. It's an in-memory storage, so it's super fast, much faster than anything that's stored on the disk.
Sure.
But more importantly than faster, it's also scale. It's mainly scalability, which is that you want to be able to handle 10 users, 10,000 users, 100,000 users, million users with the same response time.
Sure.
So that's why caching exists.
So, I mean, it sounds like a really nice solution, but then if I have my database as the ultimate source of truth and then I have multiple caches, it's got to be really hard to make sure everything is in the right place.
Yes, I think there's a misperception that cache is really for read-only data. Mm-hmm. That's because the traditional, the homegrown caches were just, you know, hash tables or something that you just created. But the caches today are very smart. So they have capabilities to allow you to keep the data fresh in the cache so that you can cache beyond just the read-only data. You can cache your transactional data. You can cache your customers, your activities, your accounts. You know, of course, you'll cache it for only a minute or 2 minutes, but in that minute or two, you'll probably read it 10 times. And if you multiply that by millions of transactions that are going to happen every day, you're saving a lot of traffic from going to the database. And while this data is being cached, mm-hmm. You want to make sure that it's always consistent, it's always correct. Different types of data have different sensitivity.
Of course.
About how long you can keep it in the cache. Some data, reference data, you can keep it in the cache for hours and days, maybe weeks. Some data you'll only keep, as I said, only for a minute, maybe even 30 seconds.
Sure.
And so that's one way of making sure that the cache is fresh. There are also other ways. For example, Ncache has this feature called database synchronization. We use SQL dependency that is part of the SQL Server feature. Where the cache becomes a client of the database and monitors the data set.
Oh, I see. And that's a lot nicer because I was thinking, holy cow, with read-only data, it's still a challenge.
Yeah.
But imagine having data that is getting updated inside your cache. How do you know how to get it back to the database? And that's a really interesting way of doing it.
Yeah. And you know, once you are comfortable, once you're confident that your data is going to be always correct, then you can cache almost pretty much every data. And the more data you cache, the faster and more scalable your application becomes.
So talking about this, is caching something that happens on the database box? Is it something that happens on a different machine? And then in the era of cloud, how does that set up?
Okay, let me actually show you a diagram.
Okay.
I'm just gonna open it up into a preview mode. So think of this as your database tier.
Okay.
This is your relational database, this is your legacy, this could be your NoSQL database. The caching really sits in between the application tier and the database tier.
I see.
So it is really separate boxes.
Okay.
And because you want more cache servers than the database servers.
Of course.
And these cache servers are not expensive boxes. These are pretty much commodity hardware. This is your typical web server type of a configuration, but just a lot more memory.
Sure.
So you want the cache to exist logically between the application tier and the database.
Okay. And so when speaking about these particular kinds of cache, like this stuff in the middle right here, and I'm going to play with your mouse here,
okay.
How do they who stores what and how do they know who has the latest? And I mean, that's the challenge that I have mentally.
Yeah, I think, so that's another thing. A distributed cache is only called distributed if it creates a cluster.
I see.
Historically, you've had Memcache, which was also called distributed cache, but it was really not, it didn't create a cluster. Now the caches of today, and cache included, they create a cluster of servers. So that means that it's a logically one cache that's distributed across multiple servers. The cache is responsible for making sure that this data is always consistent. So if you update something that happens to be on this server, the cache will ensure that all the other copies that exist in that cluster will automatically be updated for you.
I see. And see, because like my traditional caching for me was literally a dictionary of string object. And that obviously, if you have it on multiple boxes and different RAM, it's not going to be able to talk to each other. It's a dictionary object. But in this case, you're saying that Ncache will sort of have this sort of, it will know about everything else as well.
Exactly. Ncache will ensure that if you have more than one copy of that data, which in many cases you do, because
sure.
you want replication for reliability so you don't lose any data,
mm-hmm.
That all those copies are updated as part of your cache update. So that's the ACID capability, the ACID transaction capability that Ncache has to make sure that the cache is always consistent.
So Ncache effectively becomes sort of a pseudo database, but not as structured.
Yes, exactly. It's a key value pair. It's a key value store. It's in memory. It's temporary. So mm-hmm. those are the three things that need to be kept in mind. Ncache is not a permanent store. It's not a replacement of a database. It always sits on top of the database. You know, Ncache allows developers to keep using relational databases and still ensure scalability.
I see.
Because there's a lot of data that is not suitable for NoSQL.
Of course. So
a lot of financial data that's really business sensitive data is never, or I shouldn't say never, but it's not likely to go away from relational databases.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to keep it in the relational database, then you need a cache on top.
So the second question that I wanted to tack onto that is, in the era of cloud, and I mentioned this before, obviously this structure, does it look the same? How does someone use Ncache in a cloud environment?
No. Actually, the demo that I'm going to give today is going to be on Azure. For Ncache, Azure is just another virtual environment.
I see.
So you just have a bunch of VMs. So there are cache server VMs
mm-hmm.
that happen to be in some region. And the clients could be your other VMs. These could be your web roles. These could be ASP.NET applications, anything. And they just talk to the caching tier just like they were anywhere else.
Sure. So let's get into a demo then, because
okay.
I think we've talked a little bit about sort of what this feels like. We've talked about the problem and the challenges and how to solve it. Let's get into how actually Ncache solves these
okay.
issues.
So first of all, I'm going to show you the actual cache, which is just so that you know what it takes to actually create a cache.
Sure.
And then we'll use it from a .NET application. So close this here. So I have three VMs set up in Azure.
Okay.
So these two are cache server VMs, and this is a client VM.
Got it.
And I'm already remote desktoped into all of them. So I'm just going to go into one of the cache server VMs. And I'm going to launch this tool called Ncache Manager.
So Ncache Manager is probably the tool that knows about the cache on this machine.
Ncache Manager is like an Explorer style tool that allows you to create the entire cluster of the cache from one location.
Oh, I see.
So you can sit on any one server or any one box and use Ncache Manager to create clusters of caches and then also manage them.
Across multiple instances of virtual machines.
Across multiple. And that's what we're going to do right now. So I'm going to say create a new clustered cache.
Okay.
I will just name a cache. I'm just going to name mine demo cache. I'll just stick with all the defaults. I'm not going to go into the details. But this is just means that you want the objects to be stored in a serialized form.
Got it.
Sometimes you want them to be stored in an object form, especially if it's an in-prod cache.
Got it.
If it's not a standalone process. So mm-hmm. when it's a standalone process, it's better to keep them in a serialized form.
Of course, because yeah. then it's easy to serialize because
yeah.
the object might not exist in a particular process.
Exactly.
Got it.
Exactly. So then Ncache has multiple caching topologies. So I'm just going to pick the most popular one, which is a partition replica cache topology. I'll take everything else as default. And so because this is a partition replica means there's going to be two copies of every data. So Ncache will automatically figure out where the replica is going to be.
I see.
And then you can pick which replication strategy you want to keep. Do you want the asynchronous replication, which is faster? But there's a
gap. Yeah.
There's a slight risk that if one server goes down, you might lose some of the updates. Now, unless you're storing financial data, which is, you know, we've got customers, banks who have some very sensitive data. Unless you're storing very sensitive data, asynchronous is the better way to go. Most of the time, asynchronous replication is good enough, but in those cases where it's not, you can choose the synchronous replication.
Got it.
So I'll pick my first cache server, which is demo one. I'll pick my second one, which is demo two. So as you can see, I'm from one location, I'm building the cluster.
Got it.
So I'm just going to say next. I'll keep everything else. It's a TCP-based cluster, so you get to pick a TCP port in case there's a port conflict. Then here's how much memory I'm going to, well, let's say that, you know, I can give each partition
two gigabytes.
2 gigs. A typical configuration that our customers use is a 16 gig machine.
Got it.
So they'll have about a 6 to 7 gig of partition size, and 6 to 7 goes for the replica, and then the rest is kept for the OS and other stuff. So there's, you know, the goal is that you don't want to do paging. So you want to use the you want to keep everything in memory, so you want to use the cache size to be within the RAM size. So if you want more storage, then increase the RAM.
Right.
Because paging is slow. Eviction policy is something that, because it's an in-memory cache and you've specified how much you're going to allocate, what if the cache becomes full? There are two options that you have. Either you reject all new updates or additions, or you remove some of the existing data.
Right.
And since this data, in many cases, already exists in the database, so it's okay to remove it.
Sure.
So Ncache has three different eviction policies. The most popular is this least recently used. So the LRU policy will be used to remove, let's say, 5% of the cache when the cache becomes full.
I see. So, and the reason why is because caching is, again, you're using it to make lookups faster so it doesn't have to hit the database. If no one's looked at it, then you might as well just purge it.
Exactly. Because and you do it only when the cache is full.
Got it.
And again, cache will never keep as much data as the whole database.
Of course.
You know, it's a moving window of whatever you're using from the database at that. And usually, maybe it's about 10% of the actual storage of a database. So that's why you need to have the eviction policy. So I'm just going to go ahead and say this. And I'm going to now go ahead and add a client.
Now, is a client the VM that actually uses the cache?
Exactly.
Okay.
So the client is your application server box.
Okay.
And you know, you will normally have a lot more clients than just one, of course, because you have a load balanced environment. And you know, you will usually customers have about 4-to-1 or 5-to-1 ratio between the application tier and the caching tier. So for let's say for about 10 application servers in a load balanced environment, they'll have a 2-server cache cluster.
I see.
But if they have 15, they'll have a 3-server cache. So that's how you scale.
I see.
As your load, let's say as your traffic increases, you'll add more application server boxes.
I see.
And then as you add more boxes, then at a certain ratio, you want to also add more cache servers.
And what's the ratio of application servers to caching?
4-to-1 or 5-to-1 on average. But it can go higher if your nature of the use is that, you know, from every one request you're making a lot of cache calls, then it's a lower ratio. But if you're not making as many calls per web request, then you could actually have a much bigger ratio between the application server and the caching. But the average is about 4 or 5.
So that's 4 application servers per every cache server.
Exactly. And then you want to have a minimum of 2 cache servers
for replication.
Yeah,
and reliability.
For replication, yeah.
Got it.
So I've just created a 2-server cache cluster and a client. And I'm going to just go ahead and start this.
And the neat thing about this is that since it's in Azure, this is all behind some firewall
exactly.
and its own virtual private
exactly.
network.
Ncache is almost always used behind a firewall. Okay. It sits between the application tier and the database. So
I see.
The application tier is already behind a firewall. So, so it's always in a secured environment.
Got it.
Now that I've started the cache, I'm just going to go ahead and do a small test to make sure the cache is running. So I've just opened this perfmon counters within the tool. I'm going to also go ahead and open this other tool called Ncache Monitor, which is like a dashboard style tool that lets you see a lot of stuff simultaneously. And then and I'm going to now go to the demo client,
okay,
which is right here. And I'm going to Ncache, although normally you would run your own application, right?
Sure.
But you know, when you're testing Ncache, you probably don't have your own application yet. So we give you tools to kind of
just to fill it with
simulate.
Memory, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a tool called called the stress test tool. So there are a lot of tools that Ncache comes with. A lot of them are for cache management. There's a stress test tool right here. I'm just going to go ahead and start this stress test tool. And you can say demo cache, the cache name. Once I start this, it connects to both the cache servers and starts to do reads and writes. It just puts dummy data.
Right.
And you can run multiple instances of these to kind of test the load. Many of our customers, they really do a lot of testing with Ncache to make sure it is meeting their metrics. Whatever load they're going to have, they put that load or beyond and then see what the performance is.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, with just one client, we're doing about 800 to 900 requests per server. If I were to go ahead and add one more instance of this, you'll see that load is going to increase. It has almost doubled.
Yeah.
So it's going to keep doubling until it maxes out with these two boxes. And okay. Then at that time, you add a third one.
I see.
So that's how it scales. So you will know when the performance starts to go down with two servers, you just add a third one.
I see. And so you'll be able to actually monitor this using the Ncache manager.
Exactly. And you can use our stress test tool to simulate the entire stress before you do anything. And here are some numbers in terms of what you should expect from a product like Ncache in terms of the benchmarking. So for example, these are reads and writes. So if you have a two server cluster, you should be able to go up to about 32,000 reads writes per second,
mm-hmm.
and about 50,000 reads per second. This is a 1K object size, and it's a separate cache cluster,
got
so
it.
You're accessing it across the network. And as you can see, if you add one more server, it's going to go from 32 to 48, 60. So it's a very linear curve. The same goes with reads. The reads are slightly faster, you know, because there's some replication also happening here. With some other topologies where the replications is not there, the reads and writes are pretty much the same performance.
I see.
So this is exactly why you want to use a distributed cache like Ncache, because your database cannot do this.
No.
You know, it's going to increase, but then at some point it's going to, it's a logarithmic curve.
Got it. So now my next question is, now that we've sort of seen the load, we've seen how everything is working, how do I access the cache as a programmer?
Okay, good question. So there are a bunch of sample programs that Ncache comes with. There's also online documentation that Ncache has. Oops, sorry. If I were to go to our website, mm-hmm. you can go to the documentation. So you go to the .NET API reference. You can see what the API looks like. So for example, I'm just going to go ncache.web.caching namespace and cache class. That's what you're going to use most of the time. So this is a pretty very easy to use API. So you have a cache handle or a cache class with which you can do an add. insert, forget, update. So let's actually see a sample. I'm going to open this in a Visual Studio 2015. So here's a sample that I have. It's called basic operations.
Got it.
It's just going to do. I've got it opened here, basic operations. So I've got a Visual Studio project. I've got my references. So I've got two of the NCache assemblies.
Got it.
Referenced. I've got two of my NCache namespaces. Actually, the third one is also my own. But let's say these two are the ones that I'm going to reference. Then at the beginning of my application, somewhere I'm going to connect with the cache.
And when you initialize a code, my guess is that my partitioned cache is a setting somewhere?
That's the name of a cache. Uh-huh. So that is what we just... So our cache name was demo cache.
Oh, I see.
So you will change this to be demo cache.
And so how does it know to connect? Is this the SDK takes care of all of that?
Actually, what happens is when you actually create this cache, when you add this client... By the way, all the cache servers are also clients.
Got it.
So they have the client. But if I were to come here, and actually, let me just do it here. So so within the NCache installation, there's a folder called config. Within config, there's a client .ncconf. So the client.ncconf is where NCache manager would create an entry for your cache.
I see. And so when you actually create the cache, it creates some config files for NCache in general, and that any client that is on that particular machine will know, okay, I have these caches, and then you just give it a string, it goes to the config, and it does everything.
Yeah, so then all you need is the cache name.
I see.
Once you have the cache name, then the rest is all done for you. So that's why when you come to the code here, and you just say initialize cache, which basically means connect to the cache. Mm-hmm. You give it a cache name, and it gives you back a cache handle. This cache handle is the connection to the cache.
Got it.
Then everything else that you do is
key value.
It's a key value. So for example, you do cache.add. Here's your key. Here's your object, and then you can add a bunch of other things. Let's say expiration. So I've got a 1 minute expiration here. So I did a date time, and I said calendar.add minutes one. I'm going to give that as a value, and that is going to be used as an absolute expiration, which is at this exact date time value, it's going to expire this item from the cache. So, and you can specify that for every item differently. So there's a bunch of things that you can specify. There's a sliding expiration, which is really more of if you have a session object, for example, so it is done when there's no activity against that object. So if you say, don't expire this object if nobody touches it for the next 20 minutes.
Got it.
So, and there are a bunch of other parameters. So you just do a cache.add, and this item gets added to the cache. You can go and do a cache.get here. You specify a key, and gives you back the object, that same object. Again, this is going to be, when you do this, this object is going to be serialized, and sent to the cache cluster. When you do this, it's going to be fetched as a serialized byte array and will be deserialized within the client process.
Got it.
And then given to you as the object. So very straightforward API.
Mm-hmm.
The actual API, let me give you a kind of a, where's the API? I had it there. So if I were to show you the API, here's what a typical API overview is. So there's a connection to the cache, cache name, and at the end of the application, you disconnect and you do a get. You can do a get through an index operator, contains, add, insert. Add will fail if the item is already in the cache.
Right.
Insert will add it if it's not, otherwise you'll update it.
Got it.
It's like the ASP.NET cache
output. Yeah, it's exactly. I mean, even with the expirations and the sliding windows, it feels very reminiscent of the cache we're already used to in ASP.NET.
And we've intentionally done it that way. We've tried to keep it as close to the ASP.NET cache object as possible.
Awesome. So the other question I have is, and if you're looking at, for example, these keys, you have to be very careful about how you do keying for
this. Yes, very good question, yeah. So the key, you want to make sure, because the keys are strings. Mm-hmm. Strings are the easiest way to keep the keys. But within the string, you want to keep some type information.
I see.
So, you want to say employee, colon, maybe employee ID, colon 1,000.
Yeah.
So that if there's 1,000 is the employee ID and 1,000 is customer ID, there's no conflict.
I see.
Many people, they have, within keys, they would even put application name as the prefix. So if they have multiple applications that are sharing, if you remember here, I was, in this diagram that I was showing you. Just come here. So in this diagram, you've got multiple application servers. These could be different applications.
Sure.
And they're sharing a common caching infrastructure. So many of our customers have a common caching infrastructure that they share across multiple applications. So it does not have to be a separate caching tier for every application. When that is happening, you want to do some isolation. And keys, are the ways that you would do isolation. So ncache allows, so you would put an application name as a prefix to all the keys.
I see.
And there are also other things that you can do.
So that's interesting, because now you have to be clever about how you actually partition your data out. And the neat thing is that you'll be able to know the type of memory pressures that are happening in ncache, and you can actually learn a little bit about how people are using your application as well.
Very much. I mean, you've got ncache gives you a lot of monitoring tools. If you come here, so this is the administration tool. So the monitoring part in this is very basic. It's just the perfmon counters, although there are a lot of perfmon counters that ncache gives. There's a ncache monitor tool, which is a dashboard style tool, which you can actually create more dashboards. So I can come here, for example, and I can say create a new dashboard. I'll say server dashboard 2. And instead of 3 rows, I'll have 2 each, so I can have more space. And I can combine my stuff. So I can say put cache size here, put cluster health here, event log here, and the client processes. So a bunch of these controls you can sort of drag and drop. I'm going to create one more dashboard. Server dashboard 3. Again, I'll take 2 each because my screen is not big enough. And now I want to actually show some cache client counters. So from a client's perspective, so there's a performance from a server perspective, there's mm-hmm. a performance from a client perspective.
Right.
So sometimes when you're having problems, you're saying why am I not getting the performance? Well, the cache servers are performing super fast. So then, where's the problem? So then you go to the client end and say, am I getting the same performance on the client end?
I see.
If you're not, then maybe something's wrong with the network.
Right.
If you're getting good performance on the client end, then maybe something's wrong within the application.
Yeah.
Within the application itself. So that's how you diagnose things. So you can basically, sorry, not this one. So you can get even the CPU, the memory. You can see how many fetches you're doing, and this is all data that you can monitor. Most of the data that ncache gives is perfmon. That means you can use third-party tools. You can use, and then combine this with other own application data.
So this is awesome. So where, if people are excited about this and they want to learn more, where can they go to learn more?
Okay. Well, first of all, ncache is an open source cache. We did not used to be open source. Mm-hmm. So in January of 2015, we became open source. We kind of joined the Microsoft open source movement. So if you come to our website, it's alachisoft.com, alachisoft.com, mm-hmm. or just go to Google and type ncache.
I see.
And then when you come here, you can read a lot about ncache itself. There's a lot of material that you can take a look at. You can go and download a fully working trial copy of ncache Enterprise, which is what I strongly recommend that you do, even if you end up going with open source.
Sure.
Go with the Enterprise edition in the beginning so that you know which features are there. And
sure.
then you can. And then if you want to go with the open source, you can actually go and download the open source from here. Or you can go to GitHub and go to the Ncache project and download Ncache from here. Most people actually, even the open source users, download Ncache from our website because it gives them a Windows installer.
Got it. So this is pretty amazing. It's pretty easy to get started. It's also open source. We looked at the website. Any last words for people that are excited about caching?
I think, you know, if you have a high traffic application, you must incorporate caching.
Sure.
Because, you know, even if you're not having problems now, when you're going to have problems, that's the worst time to fix them because your business is really booming. You've got a lot of activity. So the cost of failure is really high.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
We've been learning about Ncache, AlachiSoft's Ncache. Make sure to check it out at AlachiSoft.com. And download if you have any questions. I'm sure they're very happy to answer them. And they have an open source version. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you, Seth.
Thanks so much for watching. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9, and we'll see you next time. Take care.